Good day. Here at Brookings Radio, we welcome District 7 candidate for the House of Representatives, Roger DeGroot. Roger, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Perry.
And first of all, what made you decide to run for the House of Representatives?
It's kind of a complicated answer. I've been involved in leadership roles as an elementary principal and as a superintendent, and that took me out to peer. And as I watched the legislators work, I was I liked that process, and I thought someday I might be able to do that. Well, as an administrator, I wasn't able to do that. So when I retired, it came back in my mind. I said, well, we might take a look at that. And then the people in District 7 have been so good to me as a superintendent and after superintendent. I decided I'd like to go out there and represent them and not go out there with a national agenda, but just as a District 7 agenda. So that's, in a nutshell, why I decided to run.
Tell us a bit about yourself for people who may not know you, Roger.
Education all my life, 42 years. I have a wife and three children, nine grandchildren. I spent 27 years as an elementary principal, and the rest of the time I was a superintendent. Now I do some student teacher observations for SDSU and Dakota State University. I'm on DSU's foundation board, so I keep busy doing those kinds of things.
Let's talk about some of the issues, and some of these haven't really changed over the years as I do these interviews, but that's just the nature of state government. And the budget is number one. It seems to be the dominant issue during most sessions, and it looks like it could be a little iffy in the coming session. Receipts have been pretty good, but you don't know what the farm account, so we'll see where it goes.
Well, the budget is going to be tricky if some things happen.
Right.
Medicaid passes, that's going to be another $4 million per year for the first two, and after that it becomes $22 million. So that has to be worked into it. The way I understand it right now, we have over $400 million in reserve in the budget. So there's going to be people wanting some one-time monies. If the food tax, there'll be some, and I'm sure you'll ask me this later, but if that comes forward in some bills, that's the way I understand it, it's another $100 million. And so I'm not sure how we balance all that, and I haven't been there. I'd have to study a lot. You know, a friend of mine told me, you listen, and then you finally, and you think, and then you answer the question.
Kind of depends on where it's at, right?
Exactly.
And let's go right into the sales tax on food, because where would you stand on that right now as we sit here today?
On the grocery tax?
Yeah. Sales tax on food, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I just saw it again on TV, her announcement last night, I think it was. And what I'd like to say is I don't want to take that $100 million away from someplace else in the budget. We talked about the budget. It has to come from someplace. And I understand that we've been running surpluses the last couple, 3 years, and I'm not sure exactly how large those are, but it must be quite substantial because we're building a reserve that's second to none, at least in my history of being in South Dakota. So I guess I'd have to see the bill as it comes forward, see how it affects one segment of the population to help another segment of the population. As you know, I'm going to peer to represent education, K-12 and the university. And if those have to take a hit to take the sales tax or take the sales tax off of groceries, et cetera, then I would have a problem with that.
Let's go right into education. We know you're a strong supporter, but what do you see as the most important thing? Is it teacher pay? Is it accountability for teachers? Is it independence? I mean, what's the most important thing to you right now? Because a lot of those issues are coming up.
Well, it seems to be on the forefront. That's out in front of everybody, teacher pay. And everybody I talk to, most people I talk to say, we're still, you know, way down the list. Again, yesterday somebody I was talking to says, what are we, 47th, 48th? I think Mississippi might be below us, and that's it. The governor last year came across with a 6% increase, which was great, and of course the legislators supported that. I'd like to see that happen too. Education since COVID has changed a great deal, so I think one thing we need to deal with is the family unit has changed. The students that come into our buildings right now have changed since COVID, and the mental health of students and the family have changed a great deal. So we need to do something with that part of it. But it's a generation loss, Perry. I mean, we lost 2 years where some of these kids really didn't do any work at all or very much work at all. Some kids did an exceptional job with that if the parents helped them at home. I'm not blaming the educational system at all. It's just one of those things that had happened. And I think Brookings did an outstanding job, do what they can do, but you can only do so much. So I think we need to talk to President Dunn and see what's going on up there, what kind of students are walking in the door.
We won't know for a while what the impact really was.
Well, we know a little bit because there's some test scores out there now that reading scores dropped 5% and math scores dropped 7% throughout the nation. And
but can they make that back up? You know, I mean, that'll be interesting to
see. Well, what's sad is this is the first time since they charted the testing is that math has gone down instead of up. And I'm guessing this is a worldwide problem, just not a United States problem. So, but anyway, or a South Dakota problem, we need to take a strong look at that and do what we can do to bring these kids up and try to catch up. They've lost, like I said, a year or two, you know, why the pandemic was going on.
As someone involved in education for most of your life, what are your thoughts? What's your take on the social studies standards?
Somehow I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm not real pleased with the standards. I'm not pleased with the process that happened to bring them forward. I've got some really good friends that have read them over in detail. Grade appropriateness comes up a lot. I just think that maybe we need to take another look at that, and I'm a little worried that we won't, that they'll go through as they are. And when I did my form, I brought up I talked about another aspect. 8-9 years ago, the state required us to adopt the Danielson model for evaluation of teachers, and that was all based on the level of teaching and higher level thinking skills. If you look at the standards, not only are they not grade appropriate, but most of them are pretty much checklist kinds of things, lower level learning. So now you have a teacher that's supposed to teach at the higher level, then you have a standards that are down on the lower level, and they're both state requirements. Something has to give there. Either the evaluation has to change or the standards have to change.
Let's turn to housing, which has become a hot button issue in South Dakota these days. There's a new program. We don't know yet how that's going to turn out, but should the legislature do more and look at more?
I believe they should. And again, I can't speak much on that, Perry, because I have this saying, if you're not in the room where the decisions are made, you shouldn't have a thought on it. And I haven't been in the room. I haven't really – I have not been in peer, and I'm not sure what those programs are. At our forum a couple of weeks ago, a question came up by our mayor that I couldn't answer. Is some infrastructure monies that are out there that are hard to get to. And I think if that's the case, maybe we need to take a look at that and try to – if we have some money from the federal government that's sitting there, that we can revise the requirements a little bit so we can get more money into Brookings for, you know, low-income housing. You know, I think that would be good.
South Dakota remains, I think, the only state that doesn't have pre-K child care funded in some way by the state. Should that be something that the state is involved in?
I say yes, but there's a lot of people out there that are against that. And even when I was as superintendent, we would go out there and work for funding for pre-K. And we would have some groups that would work against us. It's, you know, the earlier you get children and start working with them and get them on the right road, teach them how to the alphabet and how to read, the less problems they're going to have down, you know, later on in life and education. So if you catch them early, help them early, maybe you save a lot of money on the other end.
I'm guessing when you first decided to run, you didn't know that abortion was going to become maybe the biggest issue you'll deal with in the coming session. But what are your thoughts on where South Dakota is right now?
Well, it's a very emotional issue. I don't care which side you're on, and there's some people in the middle. But I can remember back in the day when abortion was illegal and there were many, many problems with it. Then the Supreme Court, I think in 1972, made it legal for all states to have abortion. For 48 years, that has been the law of the land. Well, when the Supreme Court overturned that some months ago, we had a trigger law here in South Dakota that triggered a very restrictive abortion law, which means just for the life of the mom. I don't, you know, I think that's too restrictive. At the very least, I think there should be exceptions in there. And there's, you know, like three real easy ones, you know, rape, incest, where you have two have twins but only one's viable. Another one is where you have a baby in the womb and the skull is not developed and the viability of life is very, very – it's not there. The child will be born dead. There needs to be exceptions for those at the very least. And then I believe that, you know, I think the truest type of government is the people. I'll let the people decide this thing in 2 years and put it out on either an amendment or an initiated measure.
And that's probably going to happen from the sound of it.
I would venture a lot of money on that.
Yeah. What would you most like to work on? Is it education? Is it something else?
No, education is number one.
Right.
And hand in hand, workforce development, as I go around talking to the businesses in town, what's their biggest concern? Putting people in their businesses to work. And how do you get people back in the workforce that we lost during the pandemic? Education, and again, it's just not K-12. I had a meeting with President Dunn, and they have the same issues. I mean, they have their salary level for non-professors is so low they can't be competitive in town. So somehow we need to help the university as well as K-12. Those are my two big issues that I'll be working on.
Final question. Why should the voters of District 7 cast their ballot for Roger DeGroot?
Because I'm common sense. I have made my home here in Brookings. We fell in love with Brookings for the last 15 years. I care about this district. I'm not a national candidate. I want to do what's best for everybody that lives in our district. And I hope I have your support on November 8th. And as I said at the forum, I said I have a T-shirt that I wore in the 4th of July parade that says, in the front it says, give a hoot, and the back says, vote DeGroot.
Roger DeGroot, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right here at Brookings Radio.